Hey, thanks for joining us this Sunday on Nevada Backcountry. First and foremost, big thanks to Legacy Sports International for sponsoring the show. I know we always talk about the Howa Super Light on the program. However, with turkey season right around the corner, it would behoove you to check out some of their shotguns. I know Andy McCormick over there, and that guy loves their 410s. He kills half a dozen turkeys a year with a 410.
410, that's just awesome.
That's his thing now, 410 turkeys. Mm-hmm. So, hey, go check him out. Housekeeping stuff. Dave, a little bit of restructuring going on at NBHA.
Yeah, Nevada Bowhunter Association. We are looking at kind of doing some restructuring with the Constitution, the bylaws, and how Nevada Bowhunters Association and shooters kind of blend in with the community in a sense.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head with the adding in the shooters.
Yes.
Because the fact of the matter is there's a bow hunting population in Nevada, and there's a target archery population in Nevada. Yeah. There is some overlap.
There's a lot of overlap. There's quite a bit of overlap when it comes to bow hunters and competitive shooters and or just recreational shooters. We've got to really rebrand that to take into account the year-round shooters, the paper shooters, the animal target shooters, the FIDA shooters, the Olympic shooters that we have in the community.
Right, and you've talked about it before. I don't want to go too far off the rails with archery stuff. Big shout out to Larry. Thanks for the email, buddy.
Yes, thank you, Larry.
But you had mentioned before, Bay Area is like a hot spot for Olympic recurve stuff.
Oh, yeah. I would say the bulk of the archers in that area are Olympic shooters and competitive in the USA Archery and World Archery platforms.
And that's where I'm going with this is that's where the growth in Reno is coming from right now. So
yes.
That is starting to migrate over the hill. Personally, you and I have talked about it off air a lot. I think it's about time for a rebrand because fact of the matter is the with the population growth, new shooters coming over the hill, they don't bow hunt. They're not bow hunters.
No.
So I think we need an organization that kind of welcomes all and grows the sport of archery, period.
Yeah, and there's get a lot of emails from over the hill about Reno and the Reno area. Do we have any shoots this year that would be conducive to their shooting formats? And we really don't. So it's time that we got to open that door up. That will allow a lot of opportunity around here, as well as Nevada, specifically Las Vegas and Reno, check every box for what they call a world tournament.
Okay.
And World Archery and USA Archery are looking for more places to have some of these larger world archery events. And we're a great place to do that. We're not taking that opportunity to bring that revenue.
330 some odd days of sunshine a year, 320 something
like that. 320 something.
I mean, holy smokes. What else could you ask for? Mild climate for the most part.
Mild climate, a lot of external recreational opportunities.
Plenty of land.
plenty of land. So there's a big restructuring. So if anyone out there is part of the Nevada Bowhunters/Shooters Association or want to become part of it, and have suggestions, man. We would love to hear people's suggestions on how we can rebrand this and get some of that going. So, and I know I've recruited you, Henry.
You've had
some great comments and great input, and I really appreciate it.
Well, that's just gripes. Yeah. Right
well,
now, but.
No, it's good stuff. You know, I'm just, you know, as we stated before, I'm helper number one.
Yes, that's your official title. No more El Presidente.
No,
you are helper numero uno.
I'm helper number one.
Anyway, let's not go too far on that.
Yeah.
Now let's hop into, wanted to talk a little bit about off-season fitness.
Yes.
It's my time of year personally. We'll call this Henry's thick season, I guess. January, February, man, I start launching into lifting weights, eating a lot of calories, trying to remain healthy, but put back on the weight I lose every hunting season, it seems like. This last year we were chatting about, I went back to back. I went from a backcountry bear hunt in northern Idaho, a month and a half off, and then I went straight into my deer hunt here in Nevada.
Spent a lot of days out there.
I think we talked about it on the show, 15 hunting days, I lost 18 pounds.
Yeah.
So I usually go into winter pretty light, and then chukar hunting, skiing, all that doesn't exactly put weight back on.
Right.
I'm just burning it. So in the off season, this is what I'll call like my, doing the stuff I don't like doing, the traditional strong lifts, you know, 5x5 program,
right,
stuff like that, doing the deadlift, squat, bench, and all that. But I do think that there's some value in that coming off, you know, just being, I don't want to say emaciated, but definitely looking lean by the end of the season,
right,
around Christmas time. What about you?
Back on that, you're kind of one of the rare ones, though, because most people during the holiday seasons pack it on, pack it on thick.
Yeah, yeah.
So then they start wondering about, well, what do I do now? Getting ready to see spring, and not only spring, but it takes weeks and weeks and weeks to get yourself tuned back up for hunting season.
You know? You're much more educated in this stuff than I am, Dave. You're a certified personal trainer. Is that the right phrase?
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Even though I don't have clients. Okay. I don't have clients. I just got that to help me better understand the fitness components and how to better do my own programs.
So you got a leg up. I'm fortunate enough. I have access to an elite level power lifter here in Reno that he puts together stuff for me. And I follow that for a while till we get to summertime. Then I start focusing on more of my endurance. But endurance can't hurt you in the mountains.
Yes.
If you're a triathlete build, yeah, that doesn't do you any good packing an elk off the mountain.
No, not really. No. So like part of my program, I just started a 8-week more so calisthenic program. Get that cardiovascular health back up to a nice point. My endurance, my stamina, building my legs up a little bit more per usual. And my back.
Any reason why this time of year going into that?
Well, one, for my holiday season, possible extra weight that I packed on.
Okay,
but
okay.
I also am getting ready for, you know, for the spring and summer stuff, because I do like riding my bike. I hate running.
You and me both.
I know how to do it.
Well, I'd hope. I've never seen you run, but I'll believe you.
Yeah, but I'm not going to like, hey, I'm going to go for a run today. It's not one of my favorite things to get that stamina back up to where I just feel like I can conquer the world.
Okay.
You know, so I do that, but then I always add in at least a day or two the gym with weights, because weights at my age, you know, a lot of the literature shows that doing weight training when you start getting into your 50s or later 50s, it's very important because you start losing a lot more muscle mass as you get older and not using it. So I still have to throw that in there. Push-ups, pull-ups, benches, you know, all kinds of flies, things like that. Just kind of rotate that stuff in.
So you and I are opposite ends of the spectrum. I don't start goofing with the cardio stuff until summertime, usually around end of May.
More calisthenics than cardio. So it's almost like a full body workout using, they generally like you to use like just body weight. I find that too easy. So I'll put like a weight vest on. The Davinator vest. So I'll put a weight vest on and I'll do the calisthenics stuff.
You know, look, for people listening out there, the reason I kind of wanted to do a segment like this was now is the time to start thinking of it. Like you said, coming off the holidays, you know how fast time goes.
Oh, yeah.
And at this point, if you're not thinking like, well, I could be chasing deer in August or, you know, you need to start getting off the couch, even if it's just walking or whatever.
Yeah, start out small, baby steps, man. Just walk around the neighborhood, do something like that, and then just start baby stepping it up because, you know, we start putting in for tags here in, what, 5 weeks?
Yeah,
roughly coming up 5 weeks, because the last thing you want to do is eat a tag because you couldn't get on the mountain.
Yeah, and it's a controllable variable.
Yes.
I don't know, that was kind of a mealy-mouthed way of saying that, but basically I look at, like, I don't want to eat tag soup because I physically just couldn't do it. I don't want to glass up a big bull or a big mule deer or something at the top of a mountain and go, physically I cannot do that.
Right.
And it's something I control 100%. So for me, it's that
especially
thing of like,
at your age.
Well, yeah.
Young whippersnapper.
You only got a decade on me, man.
Yeah,
I'm not that far behind you.
Hey, man, I'm pretty close to sitting on that porch and yelling at you to get off my grass.
Yelling at old man yells at clouds.
Old man yells at clouds. That ain't right.
No, it's one of those things where you can control it if you put the work in. You can't control the weather. you know, you can't really control migration patterns of animals. There's all these little variables in hunting that you don't have control over. You've got to adapt to. Physically being able to do it is not one of them.
Yeah.
You control that. So get off the couch now, folks. Put away the whatever you've been eating, fudge bars.
Yeah. Exactly.
Ham, glazed ham.
Whatever. Exactly. And get out there and start practicing.
Coming up in this show, we're going to talk about moose.
Yes, we are. That's been a super hot topic ever since we brought it up a couple weeks ago.
Yep.
And it is just getting hotter. And
clear up some misconceptions.
Yeah.
And kind of point a few things out there. And then let's talk turkey out of state, over the counter, and maybe get into a few gripes about turkeys in Nevada.
Well, I hope everyone's got their brand new cup of coffee and you're ready for the next segment, which is going to be about turkey hunting.
Turkey season is coming up, man, right across the border there. You can kill three birds.
California, over the right?
California.
Yeah.
Three birds over the counter, no more than one per day. They've got that same thing like we do with the...
It almost sounds like a fish regulation.
Yeah, or like an upland thing, you know, more than X amount in possession or whatever.
Yeah, like trucker can't have more than... Yep. Six a day, but 18 in possession or something like that.
And that's exactly how they do it.
That's how they treat their turkeys.
Not very well. They let everybody come bang them up. But I wanted to talk a little bit about the turkey hunting opportunities, man. Just off the I-80 corridor, going all the way, you know, if you take 88 out through Hope Valley, and as soon as you come out of the foothills there, public land, you got to be careful with private land.
Yeah, use your mapping program.
And I will tell you, because I got popped for this one time, you cannot camp overnight on timberland. Oh. Even if you're just pulled off the side of the road in your truck, sleeping in the bed of your truck, maybe.
Yeah.
You cannot do it. So don't try. If you're going to go over and stay overnight, find a campground or something in the areas. But over-the-counter turkey starts at the end of March. I think it's like the last Saturday of March.
Yeah, last Saturday of March.
That's when it opens. And it differs a lot from what I think most people have experienced if they've drawn a tag in Nevada. We've talked on the show before, Dave, your experience hunting turkeys in Nevada has not been a great one.
No, I've shot several in the state of Nevada, and then I've been several other places hunting turkeys as well. From my experience, granted, I've only hunted out there in the Mason Valley area.
Okay.
Man, if you don't know where those turkeys are coming out of the tree, you know, if you're not in the proximity of when they come out of that tree and land in the field, if you don't have a shooting opportunity within a few moments of them landing and working their way, you know, through their feeding process and then into the bushes, you're done. Your day is over. You're back at camp at 7:30 in the morning going, well,
what do I do now?
What do we do? You know, because once those birds get in that thick, thick brush along the river there or in some of that habitat, you know, in the sloughs and stuff, they're not coming out and you're not going in.
Yeah.
So it's over.
That's very similar to a southeastern style of turkey hunting.
Yeah.
When I was stationed back east there in the southeast, it's the whole game back east is figuring out where they roost.
Yeah.
If you don't know where they're roosting, you're not going to call them in. They've been called at by everybody and their brother. They're not interested in decoys. The whole game is figuring out where they roost.
Yeah, and that's very much like it is out there. We've done decoys. We've done calling. You would think that they're deaf and blind. Because they come out.
They might be.
Yeah. So in my experience, I've taken two with a shotgun there, but the other three were with my bow.
That's awesome.
Because with the bow, I got better range. You know, if they don't come near me, you know, with the shotgun, you've got what?
40, 45 is a poke.
That's a pretty long poke with the shotgun where I can reach him at 70 plus with my bow.
That's a good point. I never thought about it that way. Yeah.
So I would use my bow instead. I'd have a better opportunity if they weren't working towards me. you know, they're going out the field on the other end. You're like, well, this is my shot right here.
That's cool. I've never thought about it that way, but you're absolutely right. When I go out and pattern a shotgun with turkey loads and yeah, extra full turkey choke and everything,
yeah.
About 40, 45 is like, that's pushing it. That's pushing it.
That's pushing it.
This year, we got to get out and hunt turkeys, Dave, you and I.
Yeah.
I like that foothill California style of more mountain birds.
Yeah.
Where you can run and gun. They'll come to calls. They're still wary, but you can call them. They'll decoy occasionally, sometimes in some areas.
Yeah.
But there's that run and gun style of hunting, which is much more, you know, it's like elk light, I'll call it.
Yeah.
Where, yeah, I mean, it is. It's walk in the valley bottoms. You're cutting up to ridge lines to call down into pockets and everything. It's very different. It's not, I've hunted turkeys in Texas, hunted them North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia. You know, that is more like what you're talking about. Find them roosted and hopefully you set up within 20 yards of where they want to come down.
Yeah.
Versus, like I said, I-80 corridor going through the mountains there as soon as you come out. It's, I mean, it's fun. It's a good time.
Yeah.
It's an easier, in my opinion, style of hunting for me. Let's be honest. Going over the border, you're not afforded the opportunity to put birds to bed every night.
Right.
You're exactly. Just not.
No, you're not.
So yeah. You can, I mean, you might be able to scoot over the hills and do a little scouting, you know, getting them roosted. A lot of guys, I like an owl call or a crow call, and they'll usually gobble back off the roost.
Yeah.
But you just can't do that all the time. So I'd rather have a style of hunting like that where you're running ridges, trying to find birds. That's what's more interesting to me.
You know, you got Oregon.
Oregon's another over-the-counter.
Over-the-counter there.
Have you hunted turkeys in Oregon?
I've gone with a buddy. I had a blacktail. I had a deer tag.
Okay.
And they had a turkey, and they called. It was cool. They responded very well to calls.
Okay.
Very well. We had leased a big chunk of logging company land for the hunt, and quite a few turkeys in that particular area. And man, and he was a good caller though, but we would walk a little ways, you know, a couple hundred yards or whatever. And then he would call and we would wait till we got a call back. And then you'd hone in on that call. They would just come running right in. It was kind of cool.
Oh, it was very cool.
It was super cool. And he shot it with his bow and just.
When I talk about it being like elk hunting light,
yeah.
A lot of the similar tactics work.
Yeah.
You know, getting them to gobble down in a valley bottom or something, you can slip in there. I don't know what do you want to call it? Like the pull away or whatever. If you got two guys, set one up, you got a bird gobbling, set a guy up, the guy calling drops back 50, 60 yards behind him,
yeah.
Suck that bird right up to the guy with a shotgun or bow.
Yeah, just like elk hunting.
Just like elk hunting. Yeah. It's very, very similar. And again, terrain is, I won't say exactly the same, but yeah, I mean, Oregon, the one thing you got to watch in Oregon, Dave, Western Oregon is as many as you want.
Yeah.
Unlimited tags.
Yeah, we're out near Medford.
Okay, yeah. You can mm-hmm. buy tags over the counter, get as many as you want.
Yeah.
There are a few counties, and I'm drawing a blank, I don't know what they are, in Eastern Oregon that are like limited entry.
Oh, okay.
So more like a Nevada style, you got to put in for it.
Hope you draw, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
The cool thing is, being in Nevada, we have opportunities within a half a day's drive.
Oh, within an hour and a half.
Well, yeah, within an hour and a half going yeah. in some directions. But if you want to go up to Oregon or hit Idaho or something, the tags are over the counter. Just got to do your research and figure out where you can and can't go.
Washington as well. If
yeah.
you want to make the drive up
to. If you want to have a day and a half drive.
Then. Yeah. Similar though to Oregon, whereas, in fact, I just looked this up while you were talking. So it's not like I knew this off the top of my head.
Oh, you should have gone with that, man.
No. I didn't, because I was scratching my head. I went, well, I know Idaho's over the counter. I know
yeah.
Oregon's over the counter. I know California's over the counter. I didn't know about Washington, but I just looked it up. Similar to Oregon in that a majority of the state is over the counter. And same, it's the three bearded birds per spring season. But there are a few counties. And do you know Washington at all?
Very little.
Okay, where's Klickitat? Klickitat County?
Sounds like something would be in Alaska.
I don't know.
Klickitat.
Wherever
that
is, it is highlighted on the site as a limited entry county.
Oh, okay.
There are areas you can't, it's yeah. got to
so
put in.
So don't go there. What about Arizona? year before last, went out to Arizona for an elk hunt, and trying to remember the unit we were in, which I'm probably not going to say anyway, because there was a lot of elk there, so I'm going to keep that secret. There were a lot of turkeys.
So let's see. I'm looking up the Arizona regs in real time. All right, so Arizona is kind of goofy, and for everybody listening, thanks for hanging in there as I looked that up in real time, because I had no idea. Turkey hunting in Arizona, it'll set you back as a non-resident, $105.
Yeah, all right.
But that is only if you do archery turkey, and then it is what Arizona refers to as a non-permit tag. So that's not an application. So if you want to bow hunt turkeys as a non-resident, you can, and it's over the counter. If you're going to use a shotgun, apparently it's an application only.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, isn't that goofy?
Well, I guess it's okay if they're trying to increase their bow hunter numbers.
Yeah, so it says right here, hunt permit tags obtained only through application and drawing procedures. And that's where they list non-resident turkey. Now, if you go down to non-permit tags, these tags may be purchased over the counter at department offices or licensed dealers. Archery, turkey, non-permit tag. So only over the counter if you're going to bow hunt them in Arizona.
All right. So we'll just stick with Oregon and California.
California is the ticket, folks. Go over there. You can kill 3 in the spring. Tell you what, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll hop into maybe moose stuff.
Yes, let's do the moose.
Coming up on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. And we are back on Nevada Backcountry, only on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. If you miss a segment of the show or you want to go back and fact check something I said, which you probably ought to be doing, don't forget, if you go to 991fmtalk.com, podcasts are available there. And for Apple users, they're also available on the Apple Podcast platform. Before we went to break, we started meandering off there. I was trying to look stuff up in real time. And I'm just not quick enough. But you started talking about Athens bows.
Yes.
Okay, which one did you shoot in Vegas?
I shot the Axis 35 in Vegas.
The Axis. What's the one you're going to hunt with?
The Vista. So the Axis replaced the Vista. Like every two or three years, they bring out the next model.
Right.
The Axis 35 has the new cam system and the new cam AccuTune system on it for like micro tuning the cams and the whole entire bow. And it's also a little bit wider and thicker riser, but it's still lighter. And also the limb pockets are bigger.
Okay.
They're wider, bigger, and the limbs are bigger.
Gotcha.
So all of that adds to, it's more stable in the hand after the shot. It's really nice. I like it because, you know, as we've stated, we're getting older, or I am.
Well, Dave, and, every year I get a little older.
So I don't like those aggressive bows where you draw them back and you get to a point and it's like it just like falls back into the wall. And
that's why I wanted to ask you about it, because you hit me with that kind of out of left field right as we were going to break. And I thought you had 2 of the same exact bow.
No.
Gotcha. But
still awesome. And then I'm supposed to be getting the Vail 38 here pretty soon. So
my man. Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Hey, there's some stuff coming up we can talk about.
Yeah.
On that note, at some point, I'm going to wait for the green light from you. In the meantime, let's talk moose hunting in the state of Nevada.
Let's do it. So we have been getting a great deal of chatter on moose. Moose in Nevada. We keep hearing people saying that it's only going to be for non-residents. It's only that. There is no non-resident tags.
Yeah.
If you look at the state regulations, a non-resident tag cannot be produced until you have given out 10 resident tags. For every 10 resident, there's a 1 non-resident tag. The only exception right now is the mountain goat.
I was about to say, because they did, they took a tag to give to
one tag for non-residents with the mountain goat.
How many total tags there?
I don't know. I think there's, I don't know, like six or something.
Yeah, okay. I would have guessed five or six. Yeah,
it's getting up there. So, but anyway, so that's kind of how that lies out. But, you know, some of the stuff we wanted to talk about, there's some talk about like what species moose is this. You know, people were saying, oh, it's got to be the Yukon. Oh, no, it's got to be this moose, that moose. There's only four species, subspecies of moose in North America. And that is, yes, it's the Alaskan Yukon moose, which is the biggest of them all.
The most famous, yeah.
The most famous one. Then you have your eastern moose, which is like East Coast stuff. That's like Maine, New York, Vermont, New Hampshire. And then you have what is called the western moose, and that's in like the Dakotas and Michigan and Wisconsin.
I believe Colorado as well.
Yeah, right on the eastern edge of Colorado.
Okay.
But the big difference is with what we have in Nevada, and in Nevada, Idaho, Oregon, Washington, is the Shiras moose, S-H-I-R-A-S moose. It's the smallest moose of the four subspecies.
Body-wise, horn-wise?
I would say, you know, when you start looking at the comparison, they're not that much smaller than the Yukon and the other moose, like body-wise and weight-wise. Okay. Antler-wise, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they seldom get above, like, 45 inches wide.
Okay.
And if you see, if you're out hunting, if you're one of the fortunate ones to draw one of the tags, and you see yourself a 40-inch, you know, 35 to 40-inch, you better stick to that moose.
Now, I have a quick question on that.
Moose. Yeah.
Are there any antler restrictions that you've heard of so far with this hunt?
Has to have at least one antler.
That's it. Okay.
So far, unless the regs change in any way. Now, people that are out there right now saying, oh, well, there's two tags. No, there's four tags. No, they're only giving out one. Everyone's wrong. Everybody that is throwing numbers out there, you're wrong.
Nobody knows
right now.
Okay.
We will have all put in four tags when the tag allocation meeting with the Wildlife Commission commences in May.
Oh, gotcha.
So you're
gotcha.
Not going to know how many tags are available for said moose in Nevada until after you've already put in.
So the old I know a guy that knows a guy thing, and he said
no,
none of that flies.
No, I mean, it sure flies if you want to listen to them, but until the Wildlife Commission and Endow's recommendation and the Wildlife Commission says, yay, nay, may, bay, nothing's happening. It's not done. So if it starts a cool conversation with you and your buddies in the garage over a couple beers, then just feed it. Just go with it.
Enjoy
the conversation. So, but like some of the things you want to think about, even though they say it's the smallest of them, it's not that much smaller. So it's bigger than any bull elk you'll probably see in the state of Nevada, as well as any horse. I mean, the Shiras moose is a pretty darn big animal. Male and female, their weight range is going to go from 800 to 1,200, 1,250 pounds, and they are going to stand 6 feet at the shoulder.
Yeah.
6 feet at the shoulder. So we'll compare that to, say, the Yukon, which is the biggest, the Alaskan Yukon moose. They range anywhere, male or female, range anywhere from 800 to 1,600 pounds. Now, that's a big, and they stand about 6.5 feet. At the shoulder.
In Alaska, there's an antler restriction.
Yes.
It's got to be 50 inches wide
or four tines.
Brow tines.
At least one side.
So, and you're not going to get a Shiras going 50 inches. Well, maybe world record, but not.
Well, actually, I've got it here. The world record Shiras moose, it was shot back in 1952. It scored a 205 and 4/8. It weighed 1,311 pounds and stood 6.5 feet at the shoulder.
I'll be honest with you. I don't have a very good concept of just how big that is. I mean, a 1,300-pound animal is...
That's big.
Ungodly big, yeah.
That's enormous. Now, compare that to the world record Yukon,
okay,
which is mind-blowing, in my opinion. And I'm going to see if you can pick what year, how long this record has been standing. So I'll tell you what it is. The largest Yukon moose ever harvested was 1,808 pounds.
Whoa.
81-inch antlers.
Jesus.
And it stood 7.6 feet to the shoulder.
That's like Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah.
That's like a basketball player at the shoulder.
That's like Shaquille O'Neal staring at the moose's shoulder blade.
So like my old school early 1960s house, I got 8-foot ceilings, those low old school ceilings.
He would be rubbing his back. He wouldn't fit in the house.
Yeah.
So, but do you take a guess at when that thing was harvested? The longest record standing for any animal.
No joke. Yep. Then it's got to be like, I'll go 1890.
1897.
Boom.
18, that good.
It's close, within 7 years.
Man, I thought you'd be like 1971.
No, so honestly, before you gave me the longest standing, and then I knew it had to be with that. Yeah, you
dude,
gave me one with that.
Yeah.
Before you said that, I was gonna think, okay, like, you know, you had that generation come back from Vietnam, move up to Alaska, kind of go off grid and everything. So I honestly would have guessed like late 60s, 70s at some point.
Yeah. No, 1897. Yeah. So.
Whoa.
Back to our
Shirus moose in the state of Nevada.
Comparing that thing to, say, a mule deer, a good mature adult male and female weigh between 115 pounds to 200 pounds and stand 3 feet at the shoulder.
Right, right.
So. The moose not is just a little bit bigger.
Hey, before you go anymore, we do have to take a quick break. I don't want to cut you off. I want to say thanks to Hunt House Archery Center for sponsoring the show. I also want to bring up that, true to his word, he was a guest on the show last week. Tim released clothes on Sunday.
Yes, he did.
So they are available. The film's available. Go check them out. Support the businesses that bring you this content. Go hit the refill button. We will be right back. I want to talk a little more about moose when we come back.
Yeah.
Hey, the show is Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Before we went to break, Dave, there was a comparison between like a mule deer and a moose and just how dramatic the difference is.
Yeah.
Well, what about like an elk, though? How do they compare size-wise?
I brought the mule deer one up because that was a comment that we had had.
Well, like, and everybody's seen a mule deer. Yeah, I mean, you drive through Carson, you'll see mule deer.
Yeah, you'll see mule deer and, you know, like a Nevada elk compared to the Shirus moose, the weight range for a mature cow and or bull elk is between 500 and 900 pounds.
Okay.
And they stand about 4.5 to 5 feet at the shoulder. So considerably, in my opinion, considerably smaller. I mean, you're talking a foot and a half difference in shoulders and almost half the weight.
An 800-pound bull is a big freaking bull.
Oh, it's a monster.
That's
bull.
That's a giant bull.
It's enormous. And the bull I shot was, I would say, 650-ish or so.
Which is much more common.
That was an enormous undertaking to get that thing off the mountain. And there were three of us. Once that thing was on the ground, I just remember standing above that and looking at my buddy Jody just going, oh, man.
Oh, bummer.
Oh, man, this is going to take some time.
It's work. Yeah,
It's a ton of work. So,
what about, though, in Nevada? I don't want to sidetrack you too much. Are they, because I know like Alaska, there's certain regulations as far as what comes out of the field first.
Oh, yeah.
What about Nevada? Is there anything, have they put anything in writing as far as, hey, head last or any of that?
Yeah, well, Nevada's always had that rule that the head's supposed to come off the mountain last.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, most people don't. They don't really follow. And a lot of things, you know, when you're talking an antelope or a deer or something, if you're not backpacking it out, you're generally backpacking the whole thing.
Yes.
So the head's on the backpack and you've got meat and your buddy's got meat and you're hauling that thing all the way off the mountain.
One trip.
So
it's one trip. And done.
With the new moose hunt in Nevada, there will be a mandatory check-in, just like the sheep hunt. You'll have to bring the head in to an office and show that you brought the meat, you know, all the meat off the mountain and everything like that. You'll have to verify.
Bone in, bone out, matter?
It doesn't matter.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of the guides, they say it's best, even though it's a little more weight, they say to leave the bone in. And the reason for that was when you bone something out that big, you're going to have just a mass clump of meat at the bottom of your pack.
Oh, that's a very good point.
Instead of having the meat still attached to the bone and kind of distributed up your back, up your spine.
Gotcha. You know, okay.
So they say to do that. Also, packing something like that out, I mean, that's
undertaking.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
A lot of the stuff I was reading was stating that on average, with a Shiras moose, that you're looking at 9 to 11 loads to get that thing off the mountain.
Coming from the cheap seats, I will say, like, I've seen enough moose hunting videos, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. I think it was a Steve Rinella episode, and they had a giant up in Alaska, a giant moose. And they would not go after it just because of the distance and the terrain and everything. Yeah. I'll use another example, chatting with Tim Burnett over there. And he said he would not do one again because I was trying to line one up last year. He would not do it again with just two guys. He said it's too much backbreaking work.
I've got a friend that went up through Alaska and hunted. He had a 10-day hunt, shot the moose on the day 4, and it took them the rest of his hunt. Him and a buddy took them the rest of the hunt to get that moose from where he had shot it, which was about almost 2 miles from his camp. It took them almost 6 days to get that thing from where he shot it to the camp. The plane was coming in to meet them on the 10th day. He goes, if I would have shot that thing on day 7, I would have been fined. I would have been in so much trouble because there was absolutely no physical or God-given way I was going to get all of that animal off the mountain.
And it was, him by him? How many?
Him and a buddy.
Two people. Okay.
Two people.
Yeah.
So you're talking 6 days.
Ooh, man.
To get that thing off the mountain.
Versus like an elk, you could do two guys. You could make a couple trips apiece and do it in one night.
Yeah, exactly. And they say to pace yourself. Don't get overzealous and pack yourself up with 200 pounds of meat. Because you will not make it. You'll burn yourself out because there's so much animal.
We've talked about the regs before. Hold on. This is, as you're talking about this, I'm thinking like, okay, in the state of Nevada, legally with a UTV or ATV, you can go off of an established road to retrieve a downed animal.
Correct.
So, you know, terrain dependent, but if you kill a moose in one of these areas out there, you could legally take a UTV or an ATV to the kill site.
You sure can. Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, if you can get it to it. Again, I guess it all depends on where that thing drops.
Right.
You know, that's going to be the deciding factor. And like you stated, there's a lot of professional hunters out there that will pass on moose because where that moose is.
Where it is,
because they look at that terrain and go, there's no way we're going to get that moose out of here. With being a new hunt in Nevada and you've got people that are just like, I'm doing this.
Putting in for it, yeah.
Which is fine. Put in for it. That's great. Just understand that there are some real, real challenges to hunting these moose. The guide service that I was talking to, professional moose hunters from Alaska, being pros, knowing exactly what to do.
Right.
On a good size Alaskan Yukon moose. It takes them 2.5 to 3 hours to process it, to get the quarters off, do all of that stuff, and get that thing meat hung in trees, and everyone suited up and ready to start packing meat out.
And these are guys that are the most efficient.
Well, yeah.
They do it for a living.
Yeah, they do it for a living. These are guys that probably process 10, 15, 20 moose a year.
You're not talking Dave and Henry like, where the heck did I put my knife? Hey, Dave, where's my...
Exactly. Did you bring blades? No, I only have a Leatherman. crud.
Yeah.
Man.
Okay,
Get the fire going. We'll eat some of that here.
Yeah, you know? No kidding. No kidding. Yeah, so, professionals, 2 to 3 hours.
2 to 3 hours to process and get the thing hung in a tree and ready to start hauling out.
I mean, so obviously the... Department's established guidelines. You got to check the thing in. I'm assuming that's at either what's the location here in Reno?
Valley Road.
Valley Road location
or in Elko. Most likely they're going to go to Elko because that's where the 3 main hunting areas are, Area 6, Area 7, and 101 through 103.
Right.
So they harvest the moose, they're going to Elko. So that's that makes 60 sense. Youth Center
okay.
in Elko. So they'll go there. And with however many tags there are going to be, the department biologist that manages and studies the moose with these lucky tag
individuals,
holders
yeah.
on a regular basis to probably be really letting them know that this isn't your typical hunt.
I'd assume this is going to be one of those 100% success rate hunts.
In North America, the average success for a moose hunt, I'm sure it'll be a little different here in Nevada, but it's 17%.
Okay.
The average moose success rate is 17%, 17.8.
You know, when you're talking about that, like you're sure the biologist is going to be checking in with whoever draws it. And this strikes me like one of these hunts where everybody and their brother is going to come out of the woodwork to help, almost like a sheep hunt. You know what I mean? Where guys are, if it's like a new state ram, they'll be kind of tight-lipped. But man, if somebody draws a desert tag or a California tag, it's like, hey, I'll go with you. Hey, here's what I've heard. Here's what biologists are open with everything.
I'm sure this could be very similar. When somebody does get one of these on the ground, it's going to be one of those bighorn sheep pictures where you've got
15 dudes.
One that shoot, and then 8 to 15 dudes behind you, all thumbs up, and then because everyone was at camp.
I'm going to put this out there right now. Anybody listening? If you draw one, send me an email. Dave and I'll go help you.
Yep.
It's Henry, H-E-N-R-Y, at ebc.media. Or, hey, text in. It's 775-884-9910. Shoot us a text and let us know, because that is a hunt I want to go on.
Yeah.
That's it for this weekend's show. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Hey, coming up next, who knows? Tom Gresham might be talking moose on Gun Talk, only on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk.